Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
You are welcome along to Monday Night Rugby. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent is in studio. How's it going?
Good, thanks.
And Keith Wood is on the line. Evening, Keith.
Good evening, Nathan. How are you?
Very well. So this was a strange weekend just gone. There's this 11-week cycle, a hectic 11-week cycle, where it's either Champions Cup or Interprovincials for the four provinces. And this was the one week where there wasn't. It was just plain old Pro 14. And maybe not surprising then, it is a week like this where it's plain old Pro 14 that people start talking about other options that can maybe heighten rugby interest all year round. And the story was in the paper again at the weekend about a potential British and Irish league that could be launched in 2022-2023. It would be a mix of the Pro 14 teams and the Premiership teams from England that is been backed by a private investment company that could see huge riches come to the clubs. Is there much in this, Rory?
I think there's definitely something in it. CVC Capital, the private equity group, have taken a stake in the Six Nations and a major stake in the Pro in the Premiership, are also moving closer to taking a stake in the Pro 14, although it hasn't been announced yet. So they are obviously doing all this for a reason. They have a strategy. Ironically, it could end up being a private money that finally sorts out the rugby calendar. And if they don't merge the two leagues, it seems like they're definitely moving towards bringing them much more closer together. There was also a report in Sunday Times yesterday that the EPCR are looking at their structure from 2022 in terms of potentially reducing the number of teams in the European Cup and having more back-to-back fixtures in the manner that we're going to get in the next 2 weeks, which are, I think, you know, there's a lot to like about the European Cup structure, and, you know, meddle with it at your peril. But I do think that from a spectator point of view, from a media interest point of view, a British and Irish league is certainly worth investigating, because while the Pro 14 has its merits, and as it gets towards the end of the season, there are a lot of these weeks along the way where interest is hard to get. Although, you know, no sport enjoys 100% attention all of the time, and you know from a player welfare point of view, you kind of do need those lull weeks. Where, you know, just you can rotate 15 players out of your starting team with mixed results. But I think from an interest point of view, certainly the visit of Leicester Tigers to the sports ground will be more appealing than the visit of Southern Kings. There's a lot to work out with the South Africans, the Italians, all that sort of stuff. I think that we're a long way from knowing what it's going to look like and how it will work in conferences and whether the English clubs will go for it. But I do think from an Irish perspective, from a selling the sport point of view, it's got a lot to like about it, in my opinion, anyway.
Keith, this is a couple of years down the road if it's 2022, but decisions, I'd imagine, would need to take place quite quickly. Rory there spoke about the positives in terms of attendance, potentially, and from media interest point of view. If you were to look at the money side of this, do you think sponsorship, everything will come on board with a joint league, that it will be a big step up on what's there at the moment with just the Pro 14?
I do, actually. I think we've had this discussion over the last number of years, Nathan. I love the idea of a British and Irish league for a whole variety of different reasons. And there is conversations over the Heineken Cup and as to how that is viewed. The change hasn't worked as well as it would have liked for EPCR. The only fear I have is that you do need to have an ability to change players in. It can't just be down to the first 15 or first 23 or 4 players. You know, you need to make certain that you can rotate players in through a season. But I think it brings the Lions fully back into the mix. I think it then becomes part of all those teams playing in one league. You're getting the best of the best. You know where it fits in every 4-year cycle. You can tidy up a huge number of things. And if they do make the Heineken Cup a little bit smaller, that might fit in too. Because at the present moment in time, the season has too many big games on for too much and too much at stake. Whether there'll be relegation or non-relegation, I'm presuming not. It has to be into conferences, otherwise you're just going to burn out the players. But I think for me, it's the most realistic element of what rugby should be like on these islands. That's the big thing for me. I'm looking at Heineken Cup matches. Ireland take it really, really seriously. Some of the top teams in England and in France take it seriously. Some of the others are struggling this year in a big way.
generally, when it comes to changes in the rugby calendar, it seems as though that the Irish Union, the Scottish Union, the Welsh Union are always open to change and trying to progress things along in terms of bringing in more revenue for their clubs. The English side of things, Keith, which I'm sure you're very much on top of, in terms of trying to protect their own league and simply having their own league, do you think that would be a big factor in this, a reluctance to give up on just having their own league?
I don't know that they have to necessarily give up on it, but what I do think they have to do is figure out how you can have a league that functions. So a league that is losing millions hand over fist, and clubs who are losing millions hand over fist, with with a salary cap that isn't fully being adhered to, and like a lot of the teams aren't even paying the salary cap and are still losing money. So for me, I think all bets should be off. I think you really need to have a look at how to make this game be fully sustainable for as many teams as possible. So I think the spread that we've seen over the last couple of years for Pro 14 to South Africa, and the original spread over to after the Celtic over to Italy, I don't know that that necessarily works for everybody, and it makes it very, very difficult. Like, we talk about player welfare. Well, I can tell you, traveling up and down to South Africa to play games is just not good for player welfare. So, you know, if we ended up having a very competitive league on these islands, we're not too far from any airport to get there.
I think, Keith, you've got to be careful what you wish for. I mean, the Irish, I'm sure, are looking at the top four positions in the Pro 14 as, you know, being Irish held at the moment as a good thing. But the depth of that competition, how is that preparing players to play international rugby, European rugby? It probably works for them right now, but if the Welsh continue to go backwards, for example, it's not working for them. They're not getting the income. Whereas if you lump in with the English clubs, I think you definitely do bring up the commercial potential of the tournament, and you suddenly bring money into the Welsh regions. And as the Welsh regions get stronger, they're testing these young Irish players in a better way. So when you do rotate out at Glasgow, I mean, Glasgow have kind of been asset stripped a little bit. You know, they've lost their stars, their coach is going. You know, there's big questions in Scotland about the direction they've been. And having them as a healthy, sorry, they're moving in, and having them as a healthy, viable top club is really, really good for everyone, I think, you know, because it brings up the standard, and it just, everything drives to a higher point. Whereas right now, you know, the depth of quality in the Pro 14 is definitely questionable, and I think, you know, bringing in those more regular games would be good. I do think there's definitely a realignment happening across the world. You know, the Australians are trying to get out of Super Rugby. You know, there's all sorts of things, like the plates are still shifting, as Keith has often said. You know, it's still a very young professional game, and we're still figuring out where everything stands. I think the South Africans would love to pivot more towards Europe, which obviously would increase the travel times in this neck of the woods, but the Australians and the New Zealanders are looking towards Japan and how they can align with them in this kind of new world. So there's a kind of a part of a bigger picture, but I see it as win-win for Irish rugby to get involved if it brings up the standard across the board.
Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Let's talk about the weekend's Pro 14 and a couple of things we might have learned. From the Irish province's point of view, you mentioned Leinster beat Glasgow Warriors 23-10. Lots of changes to all these sides, but 7 wins from 7 now for Leinster in the Pro 14. Munster were beaten by Edinburgh 18 points to 16. Connacht 24-12 win over the Southern Kings. And from an Ulster point of view, they beat Scarlets by 29 points to 5. The question raised, I see in the last couple of days, Rory, would Leinster B win the Pro 14?
They do make a very good fist of it. I mean, even in the last couple of seasons, they've rotated heavily for the semi-final against Munster and still been able to get through against what's pretty much been the first Munster team both times. The calibre of player that they're able to bring in when they rest in their entire kind of Ireland starting team, you know, their entire Irish starting team from the World Cup of the World Cup Stars is scary. A lot of players with sevens experience, a lot of players who really look ready to go. If they were playing in other provinces, you'd think they would probably be in the European teams. You know, Will Connor's man in a match, made, you know, making tackle after tackle.
Is
really
that a new thing, the players going down the seven route first and then returning?
It's new. Well, there's players across the provinces, but Robert Balakun was good for Ulster at the weekend. He's got seven experience. It's just because Leinster end up supplying more players to every level of the Irish teams, and they get more of them. So it is new because sevens really wasn't on the radar until very recently. But when you see Hugo Keenan releasing Keane Keller for that try, with, you know, that change of hands close to the line, that was just a class bit of play at a tight moment for a player that a lot of people wouldn't know a lot about, and a player who probably will be playing All-Ireland League rugby this weekend. So there is there's a scary level of depth to that Leinster squad right now, and I think if Leinster had a few frontline injuries, they could quite happily ease a number of those players into the starting lineup and really, you know, not have too many fears going to Franklin's Gardens this weekend. Whereas you look at Munster, who were unlucky to come up across at Edinburgh team, who were not in the Champions Cup, who were still strong and who were able to play a very strong team with World Cup players like McInally, they just don't have the same level of depth.
Keith, it feels as though every week we're talking about another young Leinster player impressing, and this week a lot of the talk around Will Connors, 23, came through that seven system that Rory was talking about there. The statistic, he's made 48 tackles and missed zero in his last two games against Connacht and Glasgow. And I know a lot of people have been talking about his tackling technique and how brilliant he is at the chop tackle and how low down he can get considering he's almost 6'5". Have you seen much of him?
Yeah, I've seen a fair bit of him. It was funny, I read on him during the week, he was talking about, I think it was Noel McNamara when he was in Clongowes, and tackling under a net. We used to do that back in the day. I was kind of bringing me back to Willie Anderson. He used to have a bamboo that he'd beat you on the back if you weren't going low enough, and you'd go in underneath the net. I used to never strap my ears, but you had to strap your ears for that because you'd cut it with the bloody net. But I'll tell you what, you rucked low and you tackled low. That
sort
was
a reverse form of belly dancing.
Well, do you know what? Do you know what I love? I loved the fact that for the last number of years, I'd say 4 or 5 years, everything has been talking about defense. Now it's becoming far more talking about tackle technique and tackling. So we're seeing people push up in a very good defensive line. We have seen the big impetus from World Rugby on trying to bring the height of the tackle down low, but it's trying to get it down low and tackling properly. So the guys are getting injured by tackling poorly, hitting off the hip or hitting off a knee. But when you have your tackle technique, there was 3 or 4 instances the other day when Connors just flew through, absolutely pinned the player, safe as houses for him. And still incredibly destructive tackles, but they're safe tackles, you know. And so I love the fact that that's coming back into it. But he is another young Leinster guy. They have a huge quality of players coming through the school system that have been training semi-professionally for a lot of their school time. They're getting to academy level, bypassing academy in some circumstances. Mm. Because their skill level, their conditioning is up to a standard. So, look, it's funny, I'm a Munster man, but I get excited when I see these young guys coming through the system because you just want to have as many good players as you can possibly get. And I think that's a joy to watch a guy that he's had a couple of injuries, he hasn't been seen that much, but when he gets his chance, he takes his chance.
It is interesting that he talks about Noel McNamara and his influence on that tackling style and McNamara's now the Ireland under 20 boss, and it almost feels as though they're future proofing their career with that tackling technique, because obviously it seems to be getting lower and lower, and if you at a young age are well used to that, you're not really going to have to change your game too much.
And we've seen a lot of the players coming through, particularly at Leinster, like, you know, say Gary Ringrose or Josh van der Fleer, who have really excellent tackle technique, and even though they're up against bigger players, mm-hmm. their technique just counts for so much more because they're able to, you know, just able to do it in a safe but effective way, and also rarely miss. I know Ringrose does clock up the odd couple of missed tackles per game, but it's generally trying to direct players into certain spaces and things like that. Connors is a really interesting one, and it's almost like the second wave of that 2016 under-20s team who got to the World Cup final. The first wave was James Ryan, Jacob Stockdale and Andrew Porter, who were fast-tracked by Joe Schmidt into the international setup. But now we're seeing Jimmy O'Brien, Conor O'Brien. Connors didn't make that tournament. I think he picked up a late injury. And he was a player who was tapped on the shoulder by the RFU and said, look, we want you to move. And he said, no, I don't want to go. I think it was Connacht he was being lined up for. He said, no, I want to go and fight for my place at Leinster. I believe I can make it here. This is my province. And he picked up a cruciate injury not long after that. And he would have ruffled a couple of feathers doing that, but he stayed true to who he wanted to be and where he wanted to play. And now he's making his mark, and he's kind of edged ahead of Scott Penny, who is the player that I think a lot of us coming back from the World Cup were looking to make the breakthrough this year. And he has, like, he is still playing, and Scott Penny will make the breakthrough. It's a matter of when, not if. He's just a couple of years behind. But that a 2016 team has more to give. You know, that was we got the first wave with those kind of real international stars. But there's a few more in that batch that will win caps, and he's one that if he can, like Josh Van der Fleer will probably come back in this week. And
well, that's what I was going to ask. What are the stages then for Will Connors? Is it get onto the bench for the Champions Cup games, get 20 minutes here and there, start maybe some of the big interprovincials over Christmas, and hope he getting into an extended Ireland squad? Or is that too early?
I think it's possibly too early because he's just. Well, I'm not sure. Like the Ireland squad is an interesting one because I think all bets are off with the new coach. But if you think Josh Murphy was on the bench for the last European game, he's picked up a knock. But Doris has come back in, and Doris is really highly regarded. Max Deegan has been starting at number eight. So does he put in a cover for him, or does he go for Connors, who's less experienced, but you know is more of an out and out open side? I think he's in a battle, and that's what drives him on, is that he's in that battle. So I think over Christmas we'll see him play in those interpros. There's an Ireland camp before the first one. I think it's Ulster, so you know he'll be one of those players. They'll probably have that almost that same 15 out because the internationals will be gone. He just has to make the most of these windows and probably hope for an injury here or there. That's what Deegan's done. You know, Jack Conan's injury has opened up the door for Deegan and Doris. Doris got injured and Deegan's taken his chance, and now you would imagine he's probably in situ as a starter. But it's tough competition at Leinster, and it's going to be tough. Like, having backed himself, he now has to edge out an established international like Josh Van der Fleer to try and get into the team, and that's going to take an effort.
Keith, that level of competition that Leinster have, is that always a positive, that you have so many players competing and you're never quite sure maybe of what your best 15 is? At times you just want your preferred back row who play together week in, week out in the big games and have that familiarity, or would you prefer actually always there's somebody pushing and there's always the potential of a change?
I think you do like a bit of stability, but you don't want too much. You know, you don't want any level of complacency. But equally, well, if you look at the way the game has gone in the last number of years, the amount of injuries, especially to sevens, are just they're constant. I'd say they must be the most injured player on the field. And we're picking up a lot of injuries. Like 2 or 3 weeks ago, we'd have said post World Cup, God, aren't we in a very good position? Nobody's injured. And now you see out halves at Munster. There's a lot of injuries there. You see sevens in Leinster. You see props at different places, Connacht and Ulster, second rows. You know, suddenly there's players kind of dropping left, right, and centre. We need more strength and depth across the board because the game has become, like, how can you say it's more attritional than it was? But it seems to be. The guys are fitter, stronger, faster. We're getting a huge number of injuries. Thankfully, we're not getting as many concussion injuries, but we are getting a lot of injuries. So you need an awful lot of players. And I think players that haven't played a huge amount of rugby need to have a high level of patience, because they will get their chance. They just need to make certain that their training that they're doing makes certain that they're injury free. It may not have to be the fastest, strongest, possible, but are most powerful. But my God, they need to be injury free because there are so many opportunities that open up.
So Munster were beaten at the weekend, 18-16. It was a very young Munster side. Ben Healy made his first Pro 14 start at half. He kicked 11 points, and they may need him over the coming weeks. You touched on some of the injury problems they have. Munster have issued an injury update today. Tyler Blayendale being rested for a number of weeks after he reported soreness in his neck, which obviously may be significant considering his history with neck injuries. Joey Carberry, they say, is progressing well, expected to make his return at the end of the month. All this ahead of Saracens coming to town at the weekend. And this feels, Keith, as though maybe a defining game both for Munster in the Champions Cup this year and maybe actually for the Champions Cup as a whole, when we see what sort of team Saracens come with. If they come locked and loaded, they're obviously intending to go and progress from this group. If actually they come and send a second string side, well, then you're looking at a real opportunity there for a lot of other teams to go and win this competition.
They're still 22 points behind in the Premiership. That's where they are, that they need to do it. I think they'll... I think Saracens will be fine. I think they'll win enough of games. They have enough of quality on any team that they seem to put out in the field that they should be able to get a win. They're playing with a high level of purpose at the moment, with a chip on their shoulder too. And they're using everything that's said against them, they're using as sort of ammo to try and get their results. For me, I look at Munster. It was a stunning team picked by Munster last week. So many young guys in there, so many guys who yes, they've played some rugby during the World Cup, but haven't played a huge amount of big game rugby, and they came very, very close. And we will need Ben Healy, absolutely. The guy, it's only a couple of years since he won the first Munster Senior Cup for Glenstall and kicked everything that was moving. Fantastic kicker. Young and raw, he's having to learn in big pressure. And, you know, Munster need that at this stage. They have too many injuries at out half. He'll be there or thereabouts. And whether he sits on the bench or not, or they go back to Scannell to kind of cover 10, they're the options that Munster have. It's going to be 26,000 people will be at the game at the weekend. That is going to be truly, truly extraordinary. It will be loud. It'll be aggressive. Saracens don't have any fear going anywhere. If they pick their team on their merits with no eye to anything else, that is a very big stretch for Munster, because Saracens have wiped the floor with everybody over the last couple of years. But Munster still would have the belief, I think, that they can go and get a win there. They haven't lost there in a while. They don't want to lose there at the weekend.
Have Saracens indicated what they're going to do?
No, it's too early in the week. And, well, I mean, we can only go off what they've done before, and they kind of rested lads for the away game to Racing and then brought some back for the home game against Ospreys. But they're dealing on a different cycle, because so many of their players went deep into the World Cup and are still being, you know, were still being reintegrated at that time. Now you'd imagine they're dealing with a relatively free hand, and it's up to McCall as to whether he prioritises this game. Does he feel like he can get a losing bonus point while still resting a few and then win the home game? Because this pool, Munster's draw at home has kind of opened this pool up a little bit for Saracens, I think, that the points total probably won't be one of the, you know, I think there's still a target. Yeah, I think you can still manage your way through it. So it's a big game. It's basically, you know, Munster put themselves in a little bit of a hole by drawing at home to Racing. And if they don't go and win this one, if Saracens do come locked and loaded, it's a real test of where Munster are, whether they've progressed with, you know, they're pretty weaker with the fact that Matthewson's left and they haven't really strengthened in their, you know, their bench. Their starting team should be fairly strong. Even though Carberry's out, Hanrahan's playing well, they should be able to match up quite well from the starting point of view, but they are missing a few, and if their scrum woes continue, they could be in a bit of trouble.
Blaendahl's injuries, they've been numerous down through the years, and he hasn't played half as much rugby as anybody would have wanted. From a coach's point of view, Keith, and what Van Graan can do with somebody like Blaendahl, it's very hard to plan a team around a player who just seems so injury prone.
Well, it is. It's the seriousness of the injury. So we don't know how he is. They say he's got neck stiffness. He presented with this, a guy who's had a couple of operations on his neck. I have to say, it doesn't seem to affect him when he's playing. He threw himself around with willful abandon against the Ospreys. One in particular, with about 10 minutes to go, he smashed into a ruck to try and clear it, which wasn't a guy that was worried too much about how his neck was. And you need to have that level of confidence when you're playing. So, look, I hope it's nothing overly major. Like, it's, in as much as we were talking a little bit earlier on, you'd have said at the start of the season, if you looked at Munster with three out halves, you'd have said, God, they were in very fine fettle. But Joey Carberry comes back injured from the World Cup, and Blaendahl gets injured, and suddenly you're down to kind of one and a half, and you're bringing in an academy guy. I have to say, I still think Ben Healy has some serious skills about him, and I wouldn't be afraid of having him there at all. I think he's a quality young fella, and if he can learn in white hot games like this, why not? He made a mistake the other day. To be honest, for me, I thought it was over talked about by in the media, because he's only a kid. But I love his reaction to it afterwards. His reaction was to slot everything that happened, and he grew in confidence as the game went on. Against Harrison's and Thomond Park's entirely different. But, you know, you have to back the young guys.
Connacht beat Southern Kings 24-12. Bundiaki, new contract, 3-year deal, scored the opening try in the game. We just all played here again, Rory, where it's leaked out to the press that maybe Marmion and Aki could be on their way out, and within a fortnight both of them have signed new long-term deals. Or was there actually some substance into the possibility that Aki could go?
I think everyone's talking to everyone. You know, there is definitely substance to it. And the Marmion one, my impression was that he was close to going, but they obviously rallied around. I mean, I don't know whether the Saracen situation affected what was on the table. But it's a great bit of business from Connacht. So, I mean, like, you know, they should take it as, you know, fans should take it as a compliment that people are after their players. It means they're doing something right. And Bundiaki is clearly one of the best centres in the game, who has contributed so much to the Connacht cause. He was always going to get offers from around the place. But to secure him on a three-year national contract, I think, is a very good piece of business from the IRFU. You know, he has been almost ever-present for Ireland during his time here, apart from when he was suspended for the quarter-final. He has contributed so much to the Connacht cause in making Connacht a force. And, like, Connacht's season so far has been pretty incredible, considering the injuries they've had. But Aki has come into the fold, and just when he's there, they're just a better team. He just gives them so much steel. He even scored a maul try at the weekend. You know, he just gets involved in everything. The fans love him. I was down there for the Montpellier game, and we were trying to work, and all we could hear from outside was kids chanting his name, just demanding that he come out and see them. He's just loved down there, and I think if he was allowed to slip through the IRFU's grasp, it would have been a real blow to Connacht's confidence as a club, because he is their marquee signing. He is the player they kind of build everything around, and as long as he's there, they're forced to be taken seriously, and they just need to maybe, I mean, they almost got Severis, and obviously that was scuppered for off-field reasons, but he would have been another Bundiaki in terms of quality. They almost, and you know, losing Robbie Henshaw was a real blow, but they're building something. As long as they're there, that's right, as long as they retain Bundiaki's services, they have that star player. Mm-hmm. He's the first centrally contracted player. It allows them some budget to go out and get someone of that caliber as well, because the RFU are now picking up the foot in the bill for him. So maybe
so that's
that
the first time Connacht have had a centrally contracted
player. Yeah.
Right.
So you know, it's just another little marker. Like, we've kind of gotten used to Connacht being on the top table now. But this allows him to stay there, I think, a little bit more. That and the fact that Andy Friend is working, not quite miracles, but he's doing a very, very fine job with much less resources than everyone else.
They go to Gloucester on Sunday in the Champions Cup. It'll be live here on Off the Ball. One of the other things that you'd notice from Connacht is how well they've recruited over the last couple of years. And John Porch, who just sort of came to my attention in the game over in Toulouse, he was so solid, played so well, Keith, coming in from Australia, that they've always cut their cloth quite well, Connacht. But Andy Friend, maybe it's the connections that he's brought with him. They seem to have recruited brilliantly during the summer.
Well, I think that's often the case. You know, the coaches are going to bring the players they know. You know, or they've noticed somebody down in their neck of the woods, and they said, we'll take him in. He finished off a couple of great scores at the weekend. I just wanted to touch on one of the things for Aki. I think if Aki hadn't re-signed with Connacht, it would have put a really sour taste to the residency rule and players coming in to get their cap to go away. Do you know what? I never felt as if he was going to go away. I'm sure people were knocking on the door, but he seems to have bought into the whole idea of it too, which, you know, I think we're getting to the point now where we won't have too many more players coming through that system, because it'll be 5 years. The guys that we have, we want to hold on to, and we want to make certain that we get the maximum out of them too at the same time. So I think it was great business for everybody.
Could we have any complaints if Bundiaki had left? Is it not just a business decision to bring him over, and if he decides to go, it's a business decision?
Yeah, I think if your business decision is to go and play for another country, yes, I think you can have some complaints. I really do, actually. Not to play for a club. That's pure business. But if you're going to say, no, I really want to play for Ireland, and then go and play somewhere else afterwards, I think you could have complaints. So be it, really, you know. So I just think we're going to see fewer players coming over under those rules, because it's been made more awkward. To be honest, I'm glad it has, and I'm hoping that it gets to the point where we're developing enough of our own players through our own systems to play for Ireland and not need to be bolstered so often. We've needed them, but we need to make certain that we may not need them in the future.
Just briefly to touch on Ulster, they beat Scarlets 29-5 at the weekend. John Cooney, again, delivering very much the form Irish player. Now, I know you spoke about him last week and the pressure he can maybe put on Conor Murray. For Ulster this weekend, doubleheader against Quinns. This feels much like Munster pivotal, because they've been thereabouts over the last couple of years, and just something always seems to go wrong with Munster. They make a bad mistake at exactly the wrong time. When you look at this group, does it feel like there's something different happening at Ulster at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, they've got the experience of last year, when they did manage to get through, albeit, like, you know, they somehow got through last year, whereas they're almost in control of this pool now. And what they really need to do is get enough out of these two Harlequins games that it doesn't matter what happens in Claremont. They kind of need to take Claremont out of the equation, and so that when they get the final game against Bath are out, they're already kind of there, and they just need to beat Bath and finish the job. So I think they're well capable of it. I don't think Harlequins are any great shakes. I think Northampton are a good English team. Gloucester are a good English team. Saracens are obviously high quality. There's not a whole lot out there beyond that. Exeter are very good. But, you know, of the English teams, to get Bath and Harlequins in your pool, you're doing pretty well. I think they can. I think they have a decent injury profile, albeit Jack McGrath and Sam Carter are out, but they seem to be able to bring in a little bit of depth. Dan McFarland's really channeled. It's a very diverse squad from all over Ireland, from all over the world. They've got probably the most players from different backgrounds of any of the four provinces at stage, maybe Connacht excluded. But he seems to be able to rally them around one kind of point, and he seems to have kind of channeled whatever World Cup disappointment was there. I did think when, you know, Coetzee got injured and missed the World Cup, but didn't really miss that much Pro 14, that they were a really good bet for that tournament, because there's so many Irish guys with points to prove who were cast aside by Joe Schmidt. And they're now at a point where they've put themselves in a really good position by beating a Clermont team that didn't really show up, but that wasn't Ulster's problem. If they can get two wins in these two games, they're almost there. And we saw what they can do in a one-off game in a quarter-final last season if they get it right. So they're a good team. They probably don't have the depth that some of the other provinces have, but they've kind of recruited to build a bit more of that, and they're in a pretty decent position. And yeah, in the past they might have slipped up in this fixture, but I think they can put Harlequins in real, Harlequins back-to-back is really not the most daunting of tasks at this stage with this current Harlequins team.
All right, we have a double header of Champions Cup action live here on Off the Ball this weekend. We will have Northampton against Leinster. That gets underway at 1 o'clock on Saturday, and then 1 o'clock on Sunday. It is Gloucester against Connacht. We'll obviously keep a very close eye as well on everything that happens at Thomond Park and in the Ulster match over the course of the weekend. Keith, thanks a lot as always.
Cheers, gents.
Rory, thanks for joining us in the studio.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.